From WBUR Boston and NPR, I'm Michelle Martin in for Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. 2014 was a year of big crossover pop hits in the world of Latin music, but there's so much more out there than that. From new voices like Ibéhi and AJ Davila to longtime favorites like Ruben Blades and Juan Luis Guerra, we get a taste of what this musical genre had to offer this year. This hour, On Point, 2014, a big year in Latin music. You can join us on air or online. What are you listening to? Which artist made it onto your playlist this year? We're at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. Or join us anytime at onpointradio.org or on Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio. We are going to end this week, on a high note with two great guests who know their stuff when it comes to Latin music. José Masó joins us in the studio, longtime host of WBUR Boston's Con Salsa program. José, welcome back. It's good
Thank you so much, Michelle. Good to see you.
And from Washington, D.C., Jasmine Garst is with us, co-host of NPR's Alt Latino music program. Jasmine, welcome.
Hi, Michelle.
So, Jasmine, let me start with you. At the top of the program, we played a cut from a new album by AJ Davila. That was one of your picks. Tell us a little bit about the band and why it made it onto your list.
Well, AJ Davila used to front a band called Davila 666 from Puerto Rico. It was a real crossover success story. It was this, like, very punk garage rock band from the island that drove people in the U.S. crazy. Everyone was really disappointed when they broke up until AJ released his solo album, Terror Amor, which was absolutely just spectacular, following in this vein of like really grimy but very, you know, twist and shout garage punk rock with a sense of humor but also like a dark edge, you know.
Dark edge. Which, tell me, is there a theme to the album? Are the cuts all interrelated in some way? Or
Well, there's a lot of love songs. I know AJ personally, and he's a very lovable character. He's like a rock and roll Muppet. You know?
Okay. I'm going to find some other reason to say that about somebody. Yeah, he's a rock and roll Muppet, yes.
but it is like very, like, it's like, imagine if like Sid Vicious did doo-wop.
I don't think I can.
Well, you don't have to. You can listen to AJ Davila.
Oh, well, thank you for that. Jose, what about you? One of your picks for us was the Puerto Rican jazz artist Miguel Zenon.
Yes, Miguel Zenon.
Zenon. Thank you. So let's play a selection from his new album, Identities Are Changeable. And this is the track, De Donde Vienes, and it mixes music with the sound of interviews that he conducted with seven Puerto Rican New Yorkers. Let's hear it a little bit, and then you can tell us about it.
So within a few years, the family moved to New York. So my father is Puerto Rican from the old school. He was born in 1900 in Barceloneta. My mother is Hungarian, so I'm a Hungarican, as they're called. And what I found out much more recently is that there's actually a lot of Hungaricans, because the Hungarian neighborhood in New York is right adjacent to El Barrio.
So tell us about this. Tell us everything you can about this.
Miguel Zenon is a MacArthur Genius Award winner, professor of music in New England Conservatory of Music, and also graduate of Berklee College of Music, a native of San Juan, Puerto Rico. And he's been exploring Puerto Rican identity through his music. He did a CD on Planar Rhythms. He did a CD on Jíbaro Music. He did a CD on the Puerto Rican Songbook. And he was inspired by the voice we just heard, the late Juan Flores, who just passed away, an author, historian, educator, from a book that Juan wrote having to do with identity of Puerto Ricans in New York. And so therefore, when he came to the United States, he was also taken by the fact that so many Puerto Ricans living in the United States identified themselves so strongly as being Puerto Rican, even though they weren't born there or had been raised there, et cetera. And he wanted to explore, what does that mean? And he went out by doing interviews of the seven folks that you mentioned, including his sister. And by doing these interviews, he came up with a multimedia project, which includes the interviews, video, and the music, of which the product now is this new CD. And when he performs it, it includes videos of the interviews and the people being interviewed and the music of his group sometimes extended to being a big orchestra. But this is one of the cutting-edge albums, in my opinion, that explores the issue of identity, which is a theme that I found throughout 2014, which we will talk about later through another artist. But it's a theme that I think is very prevalent, especially in the Latin jazz world. And Miguel Sanon is an example of this.
And isn't it kind of a common first or second question that you
sure.
ask? Where are you from?
All the time.
Yeah.
All the time. I met a young lady this week, and she introduced herself, and right away I said, ¿Dónde vienes? She said, Dominican Republic, but I was raised in Lawrence, Massachusetts. So that's a quick question that you would ask.
I ask you something about that, though? Is that an okay question to ask? I mean, sometimes people don't appreciate being asked where they're from because it implies, some people feel like, well, why are you asking me? It implies I'm not, you know, it implies like foreignness. So is it an okay question to ask if
it's asked
in Spanish?
I've never had any pushback from anyone in my lifetime. Maybe some people have had it, but I've never had it. Folks are quick to identify.
So it's a friendly question.
Yeah.
It's a common thing.
Folks are quickly identify where the roots are. So that's a way of sort of like, okay, where are you from?
Where are you from? Talk to me a little bit about the mixing the spoken word with the music. I mean,
makes this such an exciting project, because the idea that an artist would sort of like push the envelope and say, I'm not just going to orchestrate some great music, I'm going to include some real-time interviews of folks who have opened their souls, if you will, as to who they are, and then do it in a way that has a theme all throughout that takes us to understanding that identities are changeable and that you can live one place, be from another place, and yet be able to identify depending on that period of time. It's a great concept.
Jasmine, you pointed us to another Puerto Rican artist, the soul-influenced singer Calma Carmona. Let's hear a little bit of her single, Bag of Bones.
Turning back, we're fallen angels dressed in black. From a thousand miles away, I'm the one you'll always taste on the tip of your tongue. I'll carry you some loose change in a bag full of my old lover's bones.
Jasmine, I mean, if you just happened to walk past the studio and heard this playing, I don't know that people would necessarily assume this was Latin music.
Yeah, I think, you know, going back to what you guys were just talking about, I think there's this really cool thing happening with Latinos right now in which, you know, if you want to explore your Latin identity and your roots, you do that, you're free to do that, but it's not something you're beholden to. It's not like, listen, you have to do this because that's all you can do. And Calma Carmona is one of the artists who's really a great example of that. I mean, she's done a lot of stuff fusing blues and R&B, like that Erykah Badu kind of influence, with like very Puerto Rican, very Caribbean rhythm and beats, but she doesn't feel like she has to do it, you know? And I think that leads to this beautiful, creative explosion and liberty. And this song is just fantastic.
It is fantastic. I know, like, most artists don't love labels, but is Latin soul a thing? Is that what we'd call it?
It's a thing that I am totally falling in love with this year. Earlier this year on the show, NPR is Alt Latino, we did a couple of shows about old Latin soul, like La Lupe from Cuba, these older Latin soul singers. And what's been happening is that there's been this revival of Latin soul singers like Calma Carmona and this very croony, like, you know, this song is cute and sexy, but also very ominous. It's almost like like a Betty Boop you don't want to run into in an alley.
Well said. I was just thinking that myself. I don't necessarily want to run into her in an alley. I'll listen from a distance.
She carries a bag of bones.
I'll say, what do you think about that?
I love it. No, I love it. And I agree with Jasmine. I think, you know, one of the greatest things that happens with music is the fact that regardless of where you're from, you're influenced by so many different genres that you're exposed to as an artist and as a musician. You know, we get excited to see a Bruno Mars perform during the Super Bowl halftime and then realize that his father and his roots are Puerto Rican. But nevertheless, here he is doing what he's doing, and he's doing it, you know, a la James Brown, a la Prince and whatnot, right? But the fact is that music today, and when it comes to Latin artists, because the world now is so close to you and that you can reach out through just the internet and things of that nature, and that artists are able to hear so many different genres, they're not scared to cross over. And that's a term that, you know, at one moment in time thought people, oh, you're crossing over, you're selling out. Well, it's not really selling out. It's more of how do I stretch the envelope of my talent to be inclusive of other genres that might influence what the final product might be. And the example Jasmine just chose is a perfect one. It's a beautiful one. That's what music's all about.
I want to talk a little bit more about the whole crossover thing later on this hour. But, Jazz, can I just ask you briefly about the fact that Kalma is singing in English here? And
yeah.
I think, talk to me about that decision. Is that considered a tricky artistic decision or not? Or is it just a matter of what's most comfortable for you?
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, at least I know that there's a couple of elements here. You know, back in the day when Latin rock and alternative started, it was very derivative. And it was a lot of it was like a kind of watered down imitation of English language rock. And a lot of it was in English. And then in the 90s, everything veered to, you know, you have to be super Latino, like what we were talking about. Like, you don't really have much of a choice, you know, be very Latino, autochthonous, in Espanol. And I think we're back at this. We've found like a happy medium place in which we're comfortable singing in whatever we want to sing about. Also, Kalma is from Puerto Rico, which has, you know, a huge U.S. influence. They speak a lot of Spanglish, English, Spanish. So she's just being comfortable in her own skin.
She's doing her thing. Well, we're going to hope that you're going to stay with us and do your own thing a little bit more this hour. Jasmine Garz, Jose Maso. We're talking about the year in Latin music. You can join the conversation. Please weigh in. Who is on your playlist and who do you want to get on ours? We're at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. We'll go out with another of Jose's picks, New Throned King, but Yosfany Terry. I'm Michelle Martin, in for Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. This is On Point. I'm Michelle Martin, in for Tom Ashbrook. We are talking about the year in Latin music. You can join the conversation. And when you think Latin music, what do you think of? Do you think about rap and rock and soul and jazz? Now that Spanish-speaking listeners are such a big part of the marketplace now, does the idea of even having to have a crossover record even make sense anymore? We're at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. You can also follow us on Twitter and find us on Facebook at On Point Radio. We're joined this hour by Jose Maso of WBUR Boston's Con Salsa, and with us Jasmine Garst of Alt Latino. And you're hearing a little bit of a performance from this year's Latin Grammys, Pitbull, in a duet with Carlos Santana on Santana's famous Oye Como Va. And you know, Jasmine, you know I just played Pitbull for you, right?
Yeah,
because I know
you.
How much you love Pitbull, not...
Michelle, don't out me like that. We're on live radio.
I just really wanted to hear the steam coming out of your ears. You can hear it, right? Like through the mics, right? So, but you know, to that end, I think...
I'll forward all the angry emails to you, okay?
And yes, about the people who love him or the people who share your view
both,
that he's not
both.
Exactly
you
quite
can
the artist that you are. Well, part of the reason that I wanted to play this is that this is from the Latin Grammys, and I wanted to ask about the range of music that's showcased and awarded, you know, at the Latin Grammys. You know, in politics, they sometimes have a phrase that, you know, the people are sometimes ahead of their leaders. And I just wonder if this is a situation where you feel that the Grammys kind of accurately reflect what's out there or not.
Well, personally, I don't. I mean, I think the Latin Grammys are, you know, they are what they are. You know, they're, there's a lot of categories. I mean, there's a difference between all the categories also and what gets televised. It's like any award show, like the Oscars, you know. There's a gazillion categories, but only some of it gets televised. I do feel like it tends to showcase like the same people year after year, and it's a little bit, you know, stale and not very creative. But, you know, I think if you dig in there, you do find some really cool musicians doing great stuff. I mean, they have some great Latin jazz categories, tango categories, rock, alternative, tropical. You know, I mean, for that main show, I think certain people tend to get spotlighted over and over and over again. Just my opinion.
Jose, what do you think? What's your opinion about that? And why would they spotlight the same people instead of using it as a platform to push people out?
Well, I think, unfortunately, you know, it's still a commercial world when you think about the business of music and the business of big music as far as selling and who are the artists. It would be similar if we would look at the context of the Grammys being, you know, Beyonce and Jay-Z.
Yeah, but the English language Grammys do these interesting mashups that sometimes get you to think about music in a different way. I think that's
true,
one reason why people, you know, tune in. Of course, they're always looking for, you know, craziness. But but they do these mashups, and sometimes they work and sometimes they don't. But it has a feeling of being kind of risky, and the artists seem to enjoy it. They seem to enjoy, you know, working together. So
that is true.
But the Latin Grammy still feels very safe.
Beavis and Mark Anthony starting off, and some people liked it, some people did not. You know, Pitbull and Carlos Santana doing Oye Como Va, of course, is great. And by the way, Tito Puente was the one that actually recorded that, and Carlos Santana that made it very popular in the 1960s. But having said that, I mean, I think, you know, for those who follow Latin music, the Latin Grammys is not the end-all of saying, okay, this is what identifies or puts a stamp on what Latin music is for the year. It's just one of many different ways for you to know what's happening, get your finger on the pulse of some of the things and some of the styles and some of the movements that are occurring. But there are other ways in which we are able to at least enjoy what's really being cutting edge and what's new and what's different and what's, you know, palpable.
Well, let's hear what some other folks are listening to. Daniel is calling from Houghton, Michigan. Who do you want to tell us about?
Hi, Michelle. I want to tell you about an artist that I discovered. Her name's Natalia Lafourcade, and she is more of a pop style, but I think the way that she captures the idea of romance and her English songs versus her Spanish song make an interesting comparison.
Thank you for that. And Frank, what about you from Onalaska, Wisconsin? Am I pronouncing it properly?
That's close enough. Hi, Wisconsin. And I'm an Anglo, but my vote's always got to be for Los Lobos. They're celebrating their 40th anniversary since breaking on the scene. Most people know them for, you know, the soundtrack to the Richie Valens film, La Bamba. But with their current tour, they did an all Hispanic language, all acoustic guitar show on their current tour. They were also pegged for maybe the next groove band in the wake of the Grateful Dead demise. But such fine musicians doing traditional and modern rock music. This latest tour, though, showed their musicianship on multiple guitar and other instruments. And it was just a fantastic show. I'd recommend Los Lobos to anybody, any fan of rock or traditional music.
And I don't know if this loses them cool points. Thank you, Frank. I don't know if this loses them cool points, but they also have a kids album, an album of kids music that is on heavy rotation in my car. And I don't know if they want me to tell you that or not.
That's all good. That's all good.
In the minivan. Big.
Los Lobos also recorded an album which I think the title Si Se Puede, if I'm not mistaken, which sort of like pays tribute to the Chicano movement in the West Coast, Cesar Chavez and Dolores Huerta and things of that nature. So you know, they run the gamut of what they're doing, the children's CD, the acoustic tour, and just paying attention. And they are a force to be reckoned with, and one that's been around, and I'm glad that they're still around performing, and they are very special.
Jazz, let's play another song that you wanted to tell us about. This is by a rapper you pointed us to, right? This is Gangsta by Cat Dahlia, and here it is.
My parents don't stop stressing, just hoping I learned all the lessons. And I'm
Jess, tell us a little bit more about Cat Dahlia and how you see rap and hip-hop fitting into the world of Latin music.
Sure. Cat Dahlia is a Cuban-American from Miami. She has released a couple of singles in recent years. In January, we're going to be premiering her album, My Garden. This album is just fantastic. It mixes a lot of R&B with pop, and her voice, you know, she told me she has a big Janis Joplin influence, which you can really hear in her voice. You know, Michelle, talking about identity, I met up with her in Miami this weekend. And I was talking to her about being a Latina artist today and what pressures she feels. And she was telling me, you know, on this album, there is one song that is very, very Cuban, very Latin. And she told me initially she did it a little bit out of spite because a record label, you know, manager guy approached her and said, listen, you're Latina. You have to sound Latina. This is a big demographic, you know, sound Latina. So she went and did this very traditional song. But for the most part, she's like super comfortable being a Latina who also delves a lot into hip hop, R&B, soul. And when she wants, she sings, you know, other types of music.
Hannes, how is that out of spite? It doesn't sound like... how is that fighting the power,
well,
as it were?
Out of spite, maybe out of like frustration, you know, but it's actually one of the best songs on, it's a beautiful song. But, you know, just talking a little bit about how you're being kind of caged in and you're just trying to just say, you know, I want to do what I want to do.
And Jose, also talk about somebody who's on your list, a name a lot of people I think know, Ruben Blades. You want to play a little bit? Let's talk about Pedro Navajo from his new album, I think, Tango?
Tangos.
Tangos. Here it is.
Por la esquina del viejo barrio lo vi pasar con el tumbao que tienen los guapos al caminar las manos siempre en los bolsillos de su gabán pa' que no sepan en cuál de ellas lleva el puñal.
Obviously, I want to hear you talk about this, but I really, I'm thinking about something that Jasmine was just talking about, this whole idea of what you should sound like.
Mm-hmm.
Is that something that you pass out of at a certain point and people stop telling you? Like, does anybody tell Carlos Santana what he's allowed to sound like anymore? Or Ruben Blades?
I doubt it.
Is that something people say to young women?
I doubt it. But, you know, in the case of Ruben Blades, I mean, he's been the maverick, if you will, from the very beginning of his career. And the fact that he decided to record an album titled Tangos of songs that he had originally recorded in an Afro-Cuban genre. I mean, Pedro Navaja was first inspired by Mac the Knife from the Three Penny Opera and was a big hit for him with Will Colon from the album Siembra. So what he's done is he's taken many of his hits, Afro-Cuban rhythms, into the tango genre. And it's something that he always wanted to do. He wanted to explore what would his lyrics sound like with a different musical background or musical bed. And this was an experiment for him, but one that he was willing to do. The same way that Pedro Navaja was an experiment for him when the music industry back in the 1970s said, you can't record a song that lasts more than 3 minutes. And he said, oh, really? And so he recorded a song that lasted 6 minutes and 58 seconds, and it became a hit. And so he has been boxed in, and he's always been the one that says, I will try it, and the people will either accept it or not, but I'm going to do it because that's what I want to do. And the fact that this song, you know, is able to live on in this new way has opened the door for people to discover him in a different way. Folks that weren't aware of him as an Afro, you know, Latin music artist and superstar in salsa music, now they're saying, like, who is this guy? And, wow, that's interesting that he's singing these songs and that they're tangos. And it's become another way for him to reinvent himself, if you will. Sort of like another chapter of this Renaissance man who's an actor, who's an activist, who's planning to run for president once again in the year 2016 for his beloved country of Panama. He will be retiring next year, doing a tour just to get that part of his career over. And this is emblemic of who he is.
Let's bring in one another call before we have to take a short break. This is Marquez calling from Spring Valley, New York. Marquez, what's your question or comment?
So, my comment is, I feel like, guys, when you are talking about Latin, Latin music or Latin in general, I feel like you are focused more on Hispanic, like people that speak Spanish or other languages like French or Italian or Portuguese. And I said, we are all Latin and we all play music. And like we have this guy in Belgium or in Haiti playing jazz or like Latin music. And I wanted to say also, I'm a big fan of your show, Michelle.
Oh, well, thank you. That's very kind of you to say. You know, it's funny on the whole, Jasmine, Marquez just called in on his own. I didn't plant this question. But every time you mention that the Latin Grammys include Portuguese artists as well as Spanish-speaking artists, don't you get calls about that saying, why is Portuguese included? It's like you can't win on this one. You can't win on this
one,
right?
Well, yeah, this is like, I mean... Okay, so in our defense, on Alt Latino, we do play a lot of music from Portugal. We play a lot of Haitian music. We play a lot of Brazilian music. I mean, there is in the Latin Grammys like this linguistic barrier, you know. But it is also a real pet peeve of mine that Brazilian music is not given the attention it deserves on the Latin Grammys. And in general, you know, I mean, Brazil is a country that produces such an eclectic amount of music. And, you know, for the most part, the conversation is like old bossa nova and all this. And it's producing like new, you know, lo-fi, punk, new bossa nova, all kinds of stuff. And yeah, I totally feel your pain on that. We do try pretty hard to cover Brazil.
Marquez, do you hear that? You have an ally here. You have an ally in the studio. She's not only feeling your pain, she's carrying your banner. That's right.
Yes. I'm not Brazilian, but I listen to all music, and Brazilian music is really exceptional. And also, I don't know if you notice the style of music, they call Kizumba from Africa, from Angola, that is taking the world really by storm right now, especially our Latin world.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we play a lot of African music as well, because honestly, it's impossible to talk about Latin music or Latin anything and not talk about Africa. I mean, and it would be extremely, you know, cynical and disconnected to not talk about Africa. We're actually always talking about it. Yeah, you can't separate the two. You know?
Marquez, before we let you go, can I put you on the spot? Is there an artist that you want to bring to our attention, throw into the mix here that we haven't mentioned that you'd like us to discover, spend some time on?
Well, I would say like Joel Widmeyer is from Haiti, and the name he had a band named Zekle, Zekle. I'm not sure if you know about it.
Well, I don't. So thank you. Thank you. That's why we called you. That's why we're glad that you called to bring some more names into the mix. We're going to ask, thank you, Marquez. Thanks for calling. We're going to ask Jose Maso and Jasmine Garz to stay with us. We are talking about the year in Latin music. You can join the conversation. We want to know, you know, if you think Cuba's musical presence in the U.S. will increase now that the U.S. and Cuba are normalizing relations. Have you been listening to Cuban music for years already? We're at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. We're going to go out with a little bit more of Ruben Blades singing You Can't Take That Away From Me at his Lincoln Center concert. Could you just tell us a little bit about this?
You know, Michelle, this is one of the greatest concerts I've ever seen in my lifetime. Ruben Blades, backed up by the Jazz Orchestra at Lincoln Center under the direction of Wynton Marsalis, in which he sang standards, jazz standards that he learned when he was 12 years old in Panama, listening to Frank Sinatra and Sammy Davis Jr. and other artists, and did it with a big band, and also sang his classic hits, Latin, in Spanish, with a big band orchestra. But this is an example of Ruben Blades, the crooner.
Oh, right, Ruben Blades. This is Ruben Blades, You Can't Take That Away From Me, at his Lincoln Center concert. I'm Michelle Martin, in for Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point, and we hope you'll stay with us.
We may never, never meet again on that bumpy road to love. Still, I'll always, always keep the memory of the way you.
got away from me.
This is On Point. I'm Michelle Martin in for Tom Ashbrook. We're talking about the year in Latin music. You can join the conversation. Before we took our break, we were talking about people feeling that they're being put into a box, into a category. Do we even need to have Latin music in a category? Perhaps if you are an artist in another genre, a musician of who plays any kind of music, do you feel the need to fit into a box? We'd like to hear from you. We're at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. You can also follow us on Twitter and find us on Facebook at On Point Radio. We're joined this hour by Jose Masso of WBUR Boston's Con Salsa and by Jasmine Garst of Alt Latino. We're listening now to the song River by Ibeye. That's a unique Cuban duo consisting of two sisters. They are the twin daughters of the famous Cuban percussionist Anga Diaz. They sing in English and Yoruba. Now, Jasmine, this was one of your picks. Tell us a little bit more, if you would.
Sure. I mean, Ibeye is an example of young Latinas doing this really interesting fusion. Towards the end of the song, they start speaking in Yoruba and fusing it in a way that is totally unexpected. I think, you know, there's an ongoing conversation, like you said here, about identity and what you have to do and what you don't. And I really think Latin music is at the forefront of this. I think when you look at Hollywood, for example, I think we're still dealing with being very boxed in as Latinos. You know, you still get people who have to play Latinos. Like, you have to play a Latino who happens to be a lawyer instead of a lawyer who happens to be a Latino. But in music, we're really moving past that. And I think songs like these are a great example of it.
I think we have a caller who wants to talk about this as well. Michelle, are you here with us? You're from Newton, Massachusetts. What's on your mind?
Yes, hi, Michelle, and thanks for taking my call. I'm very interested in how musicians are categorized and how often people are really in between the genres and find it very hard to market themselves as such. My brother is a singer-songwriter, but primarily jazz musician in New York City. His name is Marcus Goldhaber, and he does a lot of his own music. He draws on lots of different genres and influences. And he's gotten a lot of pressure to choose one and stick to that. And I'm just interested in everyone's perspective on that and how to kind of balance how to be a successful musician and market yourself well and also stay true to your authentic sound, your authentic music making. Thank you.
All right, Michelle, thank you. Jose, what about that? Have you seen, not that you're in the advice giving or marketing business, but what about that? And I'm interested in whether you've been doing this for a while, whether you think that those boxes have loosened up a bit or not?
Yeah. Well, they have in a way, but I mean, I think the artist discovers where their niche is, and then once they discover where their niche is where they're able to expand from that base. So that therefore, if, you know, as a jazz artist, they find themselves being boxed in as being a jazz artist, and jazz has a number of different genres within jazz. So, you know, you can be straight ahead jazz, you can be, you know, a number of different ways of playing jazz. But I think that the important thing is for the artist to be able to find their niche, and then once they have their niche, be able to play away from that and say, here's more of the things that I'm able to do. And they will find an audience that's receptive to that, because I think more and more the audiences are looking for what are the things that you're doing that's somewhat different, that will bring my attention to or call me to you. And so that gives an opportunity for an artist, similar to what Jasmine mentioned about Kat, right? That Kat is able to do the things that she's able to do, and yet throw in one thing that's very Latin, and that somebody will say, wow, that's a very Latin thing from Kat, and therefore they're going to be attracted to that. By the same token, they'll be attracted to the fact that she's doing hip-hop and rap and everything else in the things that she feels very comfortable with. So, you know, I think artists more and more are just feeling that they can find what their niche is, and then use that as their base from which they can explore and grow.
But I think, don't, artists have been trying to breach boundaries, I think, perhaps especially in music, right, for, mm-hmm. since forever. I mean, Duke Ellington called himself beyond category.
Yes.
And it just seems like music may perhaps uniquely because language is not so necessarily essential to understanding it and to experiencing in the way that perhaps other art forms are. And it can has always transcended national boundaries, right?
That's if why you can it's called get the universal you a disc, language.
Right, if you can get right. somebody
it's
a disc.
Universal
right?
language. That's what it is.
Let's hear from Horatio, who's calling from Charleston, South Carolina. Horatio, welcome to you.
Hey, hi, Michelle. How are you doing today?
Good. Better now that I'm talking to you.
I just wanted to know if you guys knew anything about Anita T. Jukes. She's a Chilean French hip hop artist. And now that the borders are going to be open through Cuba, if we're going to be able to hear more from Silvio Rodriguez, which is another awesome songwriter from Cuba.
All right. Well, Jasmine, I think that's, you know, Jasmine's laughing here. Cause we just threw that in to make your day because Anna Tiju is one of your faves, right?
Yes, absolutely.
Tell us a little bit more about her.
Mm-hmm. Sure. Anna Tiju is, you know, there's like two, there's two streams or ways of thinking of Latin hip hop. There's this newer Latin hip hop that is, you know, very much a conspicuous consumption, girls, bling bling, you know, money and consumerism. And then, you know, more traditionally in Latin America, hip hop has been like protest music. Mm-hmm. It's been very socially conscious, you know, with Calle 13, Orishas, Los Aldeanos, and Anna Tiju is definitely like the reigning queen of socially conscious hip hop. And her album this year, Vengo, was just spectacular. I think, I don't know what you guys think, but, you know, if you compare Anna Tiju's album with Calle 13's new album, Anna Tiju's album, in my opinion, was just stellar. Calle 13 is a rap duo from Puerto Rico, also very socially conscious. I found the album a little bit preachy and soapboxy. And I don't feel like tuning into music that's telling me, like schooling me. You know what I mean? But Anna Tiju's album and the song I brought, Vengo, it's very socially conscious. She talks a lot about like indigenous pride, which in Chile is no small thing. And she mixes it with fantastic music and she has a good time with you.
Hmm. Okay. Jose, what do you think about that?
Oh, I agree. I mean, you know, I think Calle 13 is in that group. I think the last album, Multiviral, is, you know, I don't know if I would call it preachy, but I can hear what you're saying. I mean, I think, you know, the fact that that type of music is now, the gentleman mentioned Silvio Rodriguez. So the Nueva Trova movement, the songs of movement, the songs of social conscious lyrics, of which Ruben Blades made his career from. I think that is what, for someone like myself, continues to make this such a great world, knowing that there are artists, young artists, who are using the music and the songs and the lyrics as a way of bringing attention to the issues affecting us on a daily basis. And she's an example of that. And I think, you know, the Tehuacan Lerongs and the Calle 13 and the others who are really making us pay attention to these issues, in ways that maybe pop music is not doing, is what at least inspires us to continue to search and listen to and look for this new generation of artists who are continuing that movement of we have a way of expressing ourselves and creating movements.
Well, talk a little bit, if you don't, Jose, about Cuba. The other, Horatio's other question was about Cuba. And do we think that we will have an even, that Cuban music will have a kind of an even bigger presence in the U.S. now that these relations are moving? It's interesting that Cuban artists, I think, are already very much kind of in the vanguard of American consciousness, aren't they, from all
kinds
of genres?
For sure. It's not like it's not, you know, I mean, I think in the 1960s, right after the embargo, there was sort of like a dropping off of the Cuban influence in music, but that picked up in the 1970s and the number of artists that were able to tour. And of course, you know, through the popularity of Buena Vista Social Club, then people again started paying attention to Cuba. But Cuban music has very much been in part of the influence in Latin music and continues to be part of the influence of Latin music. Those of us who have had the opportunity to travel to Cuba, and I had the opportunity in 2001, 2002, 2003, you know, Angie Diaz is someone, the late Angie Diaz, the great conguero, someone I shared a stage with, it was an example of the old school, you know, traditional Cuban music, and his children now are part of that new movement. Well, that hip hop underground movement of Cuban music in the island was very much alive. We hope to be able to hear more of that and hopefully be able to see more of the artists here than us having to go to Cuba to see him or having to go to Europe to see him. So that's what I'm hoping, that there'll at least be a wider acceptance of artists being able to perform in the United States live as they have been, but not as frequent as they were in the past.
So let me play a track that was on neither of your lists, but you, along with everybody else, will recognize it. Here it is. I don't think I even need to introduce it. Here it is.
Bailando.
Are you hearing it, Jasmine? Are you hearing it in your sleep? You're just like hating me right now because you know no. You're just not the pop culture person, right?
But you know, I
love
do
it.
Like
I'm
reggaeton.
Sorry. I don't
I have
apologize.
A place in my heart for reggaeton, like I exercise to reggaeton.
Okay. This is by Enrique Iglesias. Massive hit. Massive hit. And we use the term, you know, crossover to describe this hit. So I don't know. So let me just, Jasmine, let me start with you about this. So we've talked this whole idea of do artists need to have a, what makes a crossover hit, and do we even need to have this conversation anymore? I'm reminded, you know, that great philosopher Chris Rock in this piece that he just recently wrote, where he's been doing a lot of press around his latest movie, Top 5, and giving some interviews that a lot of people find, you know, quite candid. And he talked about the comedian Kevin Hart, and he said, look, if Kevin Hart is filling stadiums with 40,000 people, why does he need to cross over? So let me ask you this question. Is this a desire? Do artists have this desire to have a crossover hit? And what makes it a crossover?
Well, first of all, let's note that Enrique Iglesias has crossed over twice, if you think about it. Because the first time, he's the son of Spanish, you know, romantico ballad singer Julio Iglesias, who is, you know, it's like very schmaltzy, corny. I fell asleep in the tanning bed. Boleros, and to me, he had to really come out from underneath that shadow, you know, and establish himself as someone people could listen to, and then he crossed over into the U.S. So I think it's very admirable. Do we have to cross over at this point? I mean, you know what? I think everyone else has to cross over.
There you go. I like that.
What do you have to say about that, Jose?
I like that. No, I'm with Jasmine. Yeah, you know, come visit us. Cross over to who we are. You know, I mean, again, let's think about this for a second. Are we crossing over for the purposes of commercial success?
Is there anything wrong with that? If that's the reason,
well, then go for it. You know, if it's so that I can get to a wider audience and so therefore they can listen to my music and they can buy my CDs and that I can have a bigger acceptance in the United States and in Europe so that when I tour, I'm not just touring the enclaves that are Latino, but that I can fill stadiums and that are white, black, Latino folks in the audience, well then, right on, go for it. So I have no problem with the crossover idea. I think, again, the thought of Latino artists today having the ability to be accepted by, you know, my first concert, Michelle, and I'm dating myself, you know, I was 5 years old in Japan. I got to see Pérez Prado and his orchestra performing at a venue packed with U.S. Armed force, military, and Japanese, and I was blown away to see a 22-piece orchestra performing Cuban music in Japan, of all places, at the age of five. And I don't know if that was crossover, but I know that it was accepted back in 1955 as being great music, and I think great music is accepted anywhere, and so therefore, right on, let's just go with that one.
Okay, now we're going to, finish this hour without bringing. Okay, there's one more. This is a compromise between Jasmine and myself, and you know my obsession with Ricky Martin, and which she knows well, and something that this was actually on your list, so I feel justified in playing it. A new take on a big hit. This is a Caribbean folk group, Las Acevedo, with a new twist on Ricky Martin's "She Bangs." Here it is.
Then she bangs, she bangs. I meet her like she moves, and the crazy girl, she looks like a flower, but she sings like a bee. Like every girl in history, and she bangs, she bangs. I meet her like she moves,
I go crazy cause she looks like a flower and she stings like a bee. Like every girl in history.
Really, I just wanted to play that.
All right.
I just really felt we needed
there
to play
go.
That.
There you go.
Oh, okay, Jazz, give us one final thought about the year. Is there something we missed? Is there something you're really dying to tell us about that we missed?
No, Latin soul. It's to me, this was the year of Latin soul, like the first year of Latin soul. I think 2015 is just going to, you know, Latin soul singers are going to blow us away.
All right. Jose, my final thought from you?
Spoken word, identity. You know, Arturo Ferro's CD, The Offense of the Drum, has a selection called They Came, which features the spoken word artists, Christopher Chillo Cajigas. Denise Froman recorded a CD titled Feels Like Home, which, again, is spoken word with Latin rhythms in the background. I think, you know, those elements give me the idea that there's some good things happening in music.
Good things happening in music. Jose Maso, thank you so much for joining us
thank
today.
You.
Happy holidays to
Same
you.
Same to you.
Jose is longtime host of WBUR's Con Salsa. Jasmine Guards, thanks to you.
Thank you, Michelle. Thank you. I'm sorry, I just got enraptured in Juan Ligera. Thanks, Michelle. I had a great time.
Oh, thank you. Happy holidays to you. Jasmine Garza is co-host of NPR's Alt Latino. You can continue the conversation and get the On Point podcast at our website, onpointradio.org. You can follow us on Twitter and find us on Facebook at On Point Radio. We are going to go out with Dominican superstar Juan Luis Guerra singing Muchachita Linda from his new album, Todo Tiene Su Hora. I'm Michelle Martin, in for Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. Y tu nombre lo repito una y otra vez. La más fiel respuesta de mi fe. Yo bailo mi bachata con mi muchachita buena. Bachata que me arropa en la piel de una nube con manto de estrellas. Y bailo mi bachata con mi muchachita linda. Bachata de horizonte, bachata de espuma con falda de arena.